Hi, I'm Rick Kachke.
I'm Drew Steck.
And I'm Lee Allen.
And this is the Internet's Maximum Potential. Episode 11 featuring Rod Stewart's Young Turks.
The big 1-1.
And the first female guest of the show, the lovely Lee Allen.
She claps for herself. She claps for herself.
And all womankind.
She's representing. This is the movement. If women can be on the Internet's Maximum Potential, they can go on to become president.
You're inspiring young girls that, you know, I could be on the Internet's Maximum Potential one day. After its limited run.
And one day, we can go on to start our own Internet's Maximum Potential.
And there'll be some, like, feminist twist of the Internet's Maximum Potential. Where they'll talk about, like, female-directed films. Instead of heavily talking about, I don't know. I feel like Gary Marshall, you remember on the Lot, was always pushing like female directors. that's whatever I think of when I think of female directors. And it's like, that's the worst thing to think of when you think about female directors, because a lot of movies I'll watch and just be like, that was a great film. And it doesn't matter who directed it.
Gary Marshall on that show was awesome. You are great for a female director.
There needs to be more good. My sister, Penny Marshall.
Yeah, he'd always bring up his sister on that. And there was also, there's that one guy who made the skateboarding movies, Kenny something.
Yeah.
I want to say Kenny Mayne, but that's the Sports Center anchor. But Kenny made
You would do
videos.
Kenny Mayne a disservice by comparing him to that gentleman.
Kenny just made the weirdest movies, and they just made no sense. And every time Gary Marshall, I didn't really understand it. I didn't like it.
I thought they'd bring that show back this summer, and it didn't come
because
back.
Because it was like the biggest flop.
I was so disappointed.
Is the guy that won, is he working at something?
He got a picture deal. Like a 3 or 4 picture deal, I think, with DreamWorks or something like that.
A $1 million deal, I know that much.
Is it that much? It's $1 million deal, and I think it might just be one picture and then like whatever else, but
I don't, you know, so many times with Hollywood
they just throw money around.
Yeah. And nothing pans out.
Like
so.
Yeah, no, like seriously, one of my friend's scripts got picked up and they got paid like $100,000 between all of them, and then, you know, the script got bought. It was actually a movie musical called Moxie. DreamWorks actually incidentally bought it, Spielberg did, and then never went anywhere with it. Just kind of like left it on the shelves. Maybe someone like in 20 years will come around and be like, I'm gonna make this Moxie movie. But
now, had they pitched it, had they sent it to James Cameron's agent?
James Cameron
instead of Michael Crichton. I think James Cameron. And they pitched it to James Cameron.
Did you write a childhood letter to James Cameron? And James Cameron agent responded saying that James Cameron was could not take any of your ideas.
But was interested. No. The big reason...
Titanic made you want to make movies? Is that what you're saying?
That was what launched my interest in film. I was like, if the theater can do this. I thought that theater was meant movie theater, so that's why I got my degree in theater, because I love the movie Titanic.
The 4 years you were in school, you're like, so someday we'll get in front of a camera. Someday. This is all just practice. This is what they do, I guess, to practice.
Eventually we're getting to special effects, right?
But, no, they didn't send it to Michael Crichton's agent beforehand, if you're referencing one of these.
I was trying to, but for some reason I thought...
The Tales from
I thought James Cameron wrote Jurassic Park. Guess I was wrong.
No, he did not. That's a very common misconception, though, so I'm glad you brought that up.
Lee and I just returned from New York City, our first vacation, where it was just us together, and... it was a really fantastic trip.
Yeah, we had a great time. We did a lot.
And we felt that people love hearing about other people's trips. And so it would be ideal to spend an hour talking about the things that we did. I'm sure we'll talk about other things.
There'll be interjects. So let's start off. How many days did you guys go on your trip?
We were there from Saturday to Thursday. So it was July 5th through the 10th.
Okay.
So it was like, what, five nights, 6 days? Is that correct? Wait. Fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth. Yes. Five nights, 6 days. As the Hell's Angels ride by.
There's so many. They just keep. It's like a train. Like when you're sitting waiting for a train to go by,
and then they've got a pickup truck at the back.
It just keeps going.
Sorry about that. Yeah, we were there for 5 nights and 6 days.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, what was the best show you guys saw?
Well, we saw three. We ended up seeing three shows. We saw Xanadu the first night, Boeing, a few nights later, and then the next day we saw a matinee of the 39 Steps.
Okay.
And it was sort of a toss-up. I thought Boeing was the funniest show that we saw.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought
it was the funniest.
But I love Xanadu, too. Xanadu was a lot of fun as well.
39 Steps, the first half was good, where there was more action, because the staging of it was really good, because it was played by just four actors that do all the different roles. Wow. And then the second half kind of lacked excitement. It was still good, but...
There was, like, so many neat little things that they did, particularly in the first act of the show, where, for example, it's a very, like, small set, but they use, like, screens and such to... Like, at one point, it's silhouettes, and it makes it look like the thing from North by Northwest, where he's being chased by the airplanes.
Because
The 39 Steps was an Alfred Hitchcock movie, and this is a comedy that it does a number of references to
Alfred Hitchcock. I was trying to place it. I was like, where is that from? And I was like, oh, yeah.
Like, at one point, they're on a locomotive, and he kisses a strange girl, and she goes, but we're just strangers on a train.
It was
a little cheesy, but you had to appreciate it at the same time. But they like, with such a small, limited set, they did so much. Like, at one point, he's on top of the train, and he's leaping from car to car, and they just did a great effect with the wind making it appear.
Where he's really going nowhere. He's just jumping up in the air, kind of like maybe a foot in front of him.
I don't know if they even had wind or if it was just their movement, though. Were you shaking the coat behind him and his legs? But it looked really real.
But Xanadu was the show that we saw on Saturday night, our first night there. We had dinner. We had dinner at Becco, which was the restaurant that Lee really wanted to go to.
Okay.
And it was this great little restaurant. But both Lee and I got really, really dressed up for it. Because we assumed, no, everyone in New York is dressed up all the time.
No, that's the problem. I don't think people have money anymore. They don't dress like they're rich anymore, you know? I think it was Adam Carolla was talking about this the other day. He was like, people are rich, don't dress like they're rich anymore. You know, you used to wear like a monocle and like shout at people and, you know, wear a top hat and a cane. Now, you know, most of them look like homeless people. So it's tough to discern between the two.
But in the restaurant, I would venture to say that we were probably the most dressed up, among the most dressed up there.
Yeah.
They probably thought you guys were going to prom. So.
You know, it was a very nice meal. And then at the end of the meal, I had to catch it up. First of all, I spilled like some of the
sauce.
I got spaghetti on my tie and my shirt, or not spaghetti, sauce. And then, as we're leaving, I had taken my cell phone out and just to check the time, and I for some reason just put it on my leg as opposed to putting it back in my pocket. So I'm like, huh? I wonder where my cell phone is, because I just had felt for it. I stand up, it falls to the ground, shatters, like, battery pops out,
and
it goes underneath the table next to us with these women, so I'm like, oh, excuse me, I'm grabbing the cell phone and putting it back together.
Incidentally, all the women at the table look like the four women from Sex and the City.
It was only three, and they were older.
They were, yes.
So, the other one was in the bathroom.
So, like, I'm grabbing, like, the shattered bits of my phone. And I grab, like, the table stop. It's something that's underneath the table. And I grab that, and then the waiter comes by and is like, no, sir, that is for the table. So I start to put it back, and he's like, I'll take care of it. And so I'm embarrassed, and it's like, okay, we're leaving. But I had taken my coat off and put it on the chair, and then excuse me, sir, your coat. So it went from being a very nice meal to me just looking like an idiot at the end of it.
We've heard so many times of Rick wrapping things along our trip. The food was really good, though. We tried baby octopus.
Yes,
how was that?
It tasted like sweet barbecued chicken, it had kind of like the texture of one of those beef jerky sticks.
Mm.
But still had the suckers on, which is the only thing that made it kind of gross. Otherwise, it would have been good.
And it was still alive.
Yeah.
And it was kind of staring at us the whole time. It was kind of weird.
kind of chopping off its legs.
It kept asking us not to eat it, but it was pretty delicious.
What I appreciate is that I really love that Lee didn't say that it tasted like chicken, because everyone says tastes like chicken. No, she said it tasted specifically like barbecue chicken.
Yeah, well, it's like several. Chicken is just such a generic, you know, tasting meat, or like a, it's a very like vanilla type meat, so it's very easy to compare a bunch of white meats. I think all taste very similar, but it's good that you kind of throw a different.
She put a spin on that.
Yeah, I like that.
And then we then we saw Xanadu, which we were already a little disappointed because the male lead was
Cheyenne Jackson
was doing a month long run on on Damn Yankees. But we were still excited because we were going to see the female lead, or so we thought. She was not there. We saw an understudy. So we're seeing a show without its two leads, essentially. And so Lee's bummed. I can tell she's bummed. And I'm like, I'm working overtime. I'm like, hey, it'll be okay. It's still a fun show. It's all right. It'll be a lot of fun. And then I hear a guy in the bathroom say how, you know, he's just looking forward to it anyways, you know, even though it's without the leads because he's seen it before. I'm like, Lee, a guy in the bathroom said he loves the show and it'll be good no matter who's in it. And so, like, I'm, like, really working hard. A little bit of a side story. In the bathroom, one of the stalls was locked. There were two stalls and one of them was locked from the inside. So no one in there. And so, there's a line of guys, because there are very few urinals as well, and someone's trying to use the stall, like, wants to use that stall, and I'm like, no, it's locked. And he's like, break it down! Break it down, then! And I'm like, what?
Like, you're a fireman?
So I'm using the restroom. He finally makes his way up to the line, and he's pounding on that door, trying to knock the door. And it finally solves the mystery, though, of so many times in guys' restrooms, the door is, like, off of the stall. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
But apparently, it's a common thing for people to be like, hey, let's break this door down.
Like, break it down. Break it down, huh?
So he, like, throws, like six punches to the door, and apparently, like, he did something because then it, like, swung open. He's like, yeah, just took the right touch. So I come back, and we're like, okay, we'll enjoy this, we'll enjoy this, and it just ended up being fantastic. The understudies, the girl more so than the guy.
I actually like the girl understudy better than the main lead, Carrie Butler.
I would agree, yeah.
I thought she was really good.
Because we bought the soundtrack, or the Broadway cast recording, and the girl's voice isn't as pretty as the understudy, in my opinion. It's a little too harsh at times. But it was just, it's a blast. I highly recommend it. It'll be, I believe, going on its national tour starting next year. And
look to catch it. Yeah, to catch it. Yeah, it sounds like a fun one, so. Anyway, what did you say is, like, the low point of the trip? Would you say dropping the phone, or would you say there was, like...
No. Lee got to encounter hot Rick. Humid, hot and humid Rick, which is the ugly side of Rick Katchke. Basically, you can't keep me out in hot and humid weather for an extended period of time. We were in Central Park, and we had gone on a pedicab ride with a guy on a bike who looked like a Russian.
Russian version of my brother.
Okay.
So we liked him.
And I loved him because he had only been in America for like a year, and someone must have taught him this tour like verbatim. And so, like, he's just saying, he's like, Central Park can be very dangerous at times at night. Sometimes Michael Jackson comes here. Which was, like, killing me. Like, I thought that was the funniest thing.
It's like these little jokes, but he's, like, memorized them verbatim, but, like, kind of doesn't know what they mean, but just says them anyway.
Yeah. And so
the delivery's kind of off, but it's wonderful.
So after it, we're, like, looking around what we should do. Like, there were museums in the area. There was a place to eat. So we're walking through Central Park. And we get to the place to eat, and it's not open yet. And then we're like a little bit lost. And then it's just like, I'm mad. Why did we go to eat? We should have just gone to the museum.
It's kind of like a little boy.
Pretty much, yeah.
You're like a small child.
I think...
pounding his fist on the sidewalk.
Throwing a tantrum. You're just on the ground.
Then I just, like, sat and, like, wouldn't move. No. Like, thankfully, Lee loves me enough to forgive me of being just a jerk for, like, 20... Like, it wasn't that long, but it was, like, sort of like this 5-minute outburst. And then we went on to have a really nice day. So I think that was probably...
yeah, it was a very short-lived low point.
Yeah.
I think that everyone's just... There's little things when traveling. And there's always, you know, just little annoyances, you know, through the airport or whatever. Just like little people who just do jerky things that you just kind of take in stride and go, oh, what a jerk, and then just keep going. But over time, those just slowly build up within you. And even if it's for 5 minutes, I think everybody just kind of has a low point. Whatever the traveling, even if it's like the best trip ever, you'll go and you'll just at one point be like, it'll all hit you at once. You'll let it all out, and then it'll just keep going, and it'll be okay.
Yeah, we quickly were back on track. And
we went to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, where we thought of you there because they had a superhero display where we got to be inches away from the costume from The Dark Knight.
The Batman costume.
That Christian Bale says is much better because he can turn his head in it and it's much cooler.
I don't know how I feel about it, though.
Wait.
Drew has a problem with the new costume.
The new costume. The difference between, I don't know, the new costume and the old costume, I kind of don't like because of the, it's got too much stuff on it, I think. It's got, like, a bunch of, like it's really more detailed. It looks a little more, like, Clooney-esque Batman than, you know, the first one. What I enjoyed was that it was, you know, built out of something that wasn't intended to be a bat suit. It was supposed to be, you know, a suit built for the army. Mm-hmm. And then the new one kind of looks a little bit more like anime Batman. So, or like, I don't know, just, I'm not as, or like it was built in China or something. I'm not very,
Yeah, it's not as sleek looking.
No,
it's
that's
like
definitely...
industrial, military, a lot of mesh. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what, I don't know. I have to watch it in the film before I make my final decision. But I don't. Me and another fanboy were having a discussion about whether or not
fanboy.
We liked it.
Is it actually called a fanboy?
Yeah, he's never heard of the term
fanboy.
Yeah,
like people that are like Star Wars geeks and are obsessed with it.
Okay.
Are like classified as
fanboys.
Yeah. My brother is going. He's dressing up as the Joker. He's letting his hair grow. He's gonna mess it up. He's gonna get a purple suit and yellow tie. And
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I guess he's also a fanboy.
So, I mean, fanboy is anybody who, I guess, is overly enthusiastic about something to the point where it's bordering on obsession.
So it's not Dark Knight specific?
No.
Oh,
but
okay.
It's more like we're fans of comics and superhero movies in general, and we were discussing whether or not we liked the suit from the first one and second one better, and we just kind of feel like between that and the Batpod motorcycle type thing, it kind of, I don't know, he looks too much, it looks too much like something like a biker would wear. We decided his new costume. So
someone that rode by earlier did have it
on. They're selling it now. So,
but the thing at the Met was kind of bizarre.
But it sounds really cool. It sounds really neat.
Like it's the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and I should spank myself right now, slap my hand self on the wrist because I just used the Met. And I'm not real big on abbreviations. So.
I don't like people calling it the Met as well. I have something wrong with that.
Because I think they're referring to like an individual player on the baseball team.
That's what I don't like.
But it was like the superhero portion is brand new to the museum, limited installment, and it sort of had like a costume from like Iron Man. It was the Robert Downey Jr. costume, and then it would be like designs inspired by Iron Man, and it was like fashion designs sort of that looked a little bit like it, maybe.
So they're like just normal everyday clothes that people wear.
It was like runway, like from 1940s, like,
oh, okay.
Really bizarre costume.
Yeah,
I thought it was cool,
but it was just sort of a bizarre, like, you don't expect to see that in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. I don't know, like, and they had like Rebecca Romijn Stamos, like from X-Men 2,
all the
like all the
body paint. Yeah.
Yeah, they had like that. It felt Like, I don't know, like, you expected to see that more in, like show business type museum.
Not like the Metropolitan Museum of Art. That's kind of funny, but kind of cool at the same time.
It was real, I mean, it was really cool.
They keep it, I guess they keep it relevant and neat and try and hit that base.
Yeah, and they had, like, the Spider-Man 3 costumes that Tobey Maguire wore, so that was neat. Then, that same day, we went to the Guggenheim, where we spent about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Really?
The Guggenheim. Have you seen what that building looks like? It's sort of this white...
Isn't it like beehive?
Yeah.
And basically you just walk around and up the beehive, and they have some like things that split off from it, but there's like really nothing there. It's just all very weird.
It gets progressively weird. Like hanging really? Genitalia and like the weird part of museums. There's that weird art that you don't really get.
Yeah. But sometimes...
Like, the whole museum was that.
Yeah, the whole museum.
It's like, well, there's times when you're into that. Or times, like, when you kind of, like, want to, like, use your brain, like, really heavily and figure it out or try and grasp some meaning from it. But then there's other times where you're just like, I'm over this. I really don't want
to
deal with
it. The nice thing about Lee and I is that we're not pretentious. So we were able to just breeze through.
There's the pretentious people who are like, I have to do this because I'm pretentious. What would my friends think? And then there's like normal people. There's normal people who are just like, what the hell is this? Like, what the hell?
But, and then we wrapped it up, the museums that day, by going to the American Museum of Natural History.
Which was Museum
what?
From Night at the Museum.
Oh, yeah.
And it's awesome.
Is it really?
It is.
Definitely our favorite.
Seriously, like, the best museum. It's got all sorts of dinosaur fossils and, triceratops and prehistoric turtles.
Oh, wow.
And just these incredible fossils.
You should
fossils.
Just, like, hung out and then, until they locked the doors and then see what happened. Huh? And see if this came around.
Like, these little,
Like, I didn't see that one. I knew he'd drop it in there somewhere. I was just waiting for it. I'm glad it's over now. No, but, my favorite museum in the world is actually the Natural History Museum in San Diego, in Balboa Park there. So I love that one. I love the Smithsonian Natural History, and I'm sure I'd love it too, yeah, in New York.
And it was a really neat museum. We went to a planetarium, and it was a really cool video, but of course I fell asleep, because... Anytime video seems to start when I'm with Lee, I fall asleep.
You fall asleep and he does this light little snore, and then I wake him up and then he denies sleeping.
It's a common problem with guys and their girlfriends, I'll be honest. It's the truth. Is that, yeah, when you're there, you're
but
with
it's
your girlfriend.
But even his selection a lot of times. It's not like just my stuff that we're watching.
No, it's I could be watching, for instance, one time I was watching Hot Fuzz. I love Hot Fuzz. I can always sit down and watch it. And with the girl, and just fell asleep. And it was like the first time she was watching it, so I was trying to like get her into it, or like expose her to something different because she hadn't seen Shaun of the Dead. And then she was enjoying it, and I just like fell asleep because I don't know. And it wasn't even that late; it was only like 8 or 9. And
I think my sleeping though is a little weird because it's almost like narcolepsy. I'll be awake watching it, and then all of a sudden, boom,
I'm out,
and it'll be like. Even like 30 seconds, and I'll be aware of what I was watching, and I'll be like woken back up.
Yeah, that's true, because he can't say what was on. Like, what he was watching while he was asleep, but he's like snoring, like physically, really, definitely asleep.
That is very odd. That doesn't even fit my theory, but I was going to say, like, several of my other friends, like, my brother notoriously is bad at it, and one of my other good friends, like, when me and him and her girlfriend all hang out, like, we can't watch a movie because he'll fall asleep, and then, you know.
Do you have an actual theory of why that is?
No, I don't, I'm working on it, but Rick is definitely an outlier to that theory.
I know, I'm like, honestly, it's like some sort of, like, mild narcolepsy.
I'm pretty sure
but
you should
But the fact that I'm conscious of what's happening, too, is...
That's what's really odd, is that you know what's going on in your surroundings, but yet you're obviously, like, snoring and, like...
being disruptive.
Getting into, like, REM sleep, so... I don't know.
The day in between that, on Sunday, we went to the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater then. And
how was that?
That was a really, really good show.
We saw ASCAT, their sort of the well-known improv style that they do. Where they do...
That's the way I always say it when I see it.
They have someone come as a guest, you get a suggestion from the audience, and they do a monologue based on that suggestion, and then the improvisers do skits based on the monologue.
Yep.
And it, we ended up seeing it with a great cast. Amy Poehler.
Dude, she in it?
She was in it.
She's
and,
one of the founding members.
Yeah, she was pregnant.
Pregnant and in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it was Ian Roberts as well, who was one of the original four members of Upright Citizens
That's
Brigade.
Right.
And he's based in L.A. now, if I'm not mistaken.
They started a theater out there, yeah.
Yeah. And so it was. I was amazed to see him there. He and Amy Poehler came out before the show and basically said, it's okay for her to be doing this. Don't flip out all the time. And then he was like, but if things get out of hand, we do have a stunt double for any time, you know, the scene might be going to something action-oriented. And also in the show were Seth Meyers from SNL and
Rachel Dratch
too.
How was Seth Meyers in a
Seth Meyers
in an improv format?
It was the funniest I've seen him. I'm not real crazy about Seth Meyers.
Neither am I, but I was, yeah.
But I thought it was like, oh, he actually has a really good sense of humor and is able to play like a straight guy and have scenes go a little wacky and wild.
A lot of them are, you know, and it's like I'll see him in like little like thing, like they're the funniest when like they're doing something that's not going to be seen by a lot of people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is, or you know.
It's just nice when they're more laid back and not trying so hard.
Yeah.
I think that might have something to do with it.
The UCB theater too was just, it's a very like just sort of small,
intimate.
Yeah. You know, and like seating all around. And, like, maybe, like, what, would you say, like, 150, 200 people, maybe?
Yeah, I'd be about that much.
Maybe, like, the size of, like, the, for local reference, like, the Comedy Sports risers about all the way around?
Yeah, like, did you ever go to the old Comedy Sports?
The one on
4th Street?
Yeah. I think I went there when I was younger, so I kind of have a frame of reference.
Yeah, it was a lot like the old Comedy Sports, just sort of a, even a smaller version of the old Comedy Sports. But, yeah, then the best part, though, was at one point Amy Poehler was about to be a basketball referee.
Oh, yeah.
And Ian Roberts was like, oh, whoa, stunt double. So they put in the guy who had been the designated stunt double for a few scenes. And he goes in, and as he's tossing up the ball, both of the other guys on stage went to turn and, like, beat him up. And one of them threw a kick. And he was gonna like trying to like throw a mock kick to the guy's stomach, but he wasn't able to pull back in time. So you just hear this, and the guy has been, honest to God, like kicked right in the gut. And so like the theater, like everyone's like just dying, and Ian Roberts is screaming, "I just saved your baby's life, Amy." Oh, it was awesome.
Oh, it's wonderful.
And then we were on the taxis, they have like a little video screen, and
yeah,
we ended
up
We ended up seeing that guy who was kicked in the stomach on like a commercial for ESPN Radio.
No way.
Like we would see him throughout it, which was it was just funny to see him
in
another venue. Like we saw that guy get kicked in the stomach.
It's good to see he's getting work. It's good to see he's getting work.
But it was great, too, because the stage was so small, and we were so close to the stage that when the next scene was going on, and when that actor was finally able to get back, the guy who kicked him in the stomach was, like, so sorry. And, like, just, like, you know, often said, oh, my God, I'm really sorry. trying to think of other noteworthy things that we did when we were out there. We went to the Empire State Building. Initially, we went there Monday night, but the theaters are dark. There are no shows going on Monday night, so a lot of tourists were there anyhow at the Empire State Building. So it would have been like hour and a half, 2 hour wait is what they said.
There's a huge line just to get into the building.
Oh, wow.
So we didn't even get up the escalator.
Yeah.
So then the next night, after we saw Boeing, which featured a very hilarious Gina Gershon, and we saw the best actor at the Tonys.
Mark Rylance, who was very, very good. Definitely deserved it.
Was Bradley Whitford in that one?
Bradley Whitford is...
Christine Baranski.
Did he play a role similar to Eric from Billy Madison?
I haven't seen the movie Billy Madison.
You've never seen Billy Madison?
No.
He gives a striking performance in that.
But Bradley Whitford, you would think that he'd be the lead because it's him where he's juggling three stewardesses, his fiancés, and you would think that it's him because he's sort of, he's the center character.
Yeah, yeah.
But in actuality, it's this Mark Rylance who is like is his longtime buddy who he hasn't seen forever, who ends up being the one trying to like have these three women who usually are come at different days. They don't know about each other. They're all there on the same day, so he's trying to like, be the air traffic controller and keep them away from
each other. Yeah, yeah, I think it's more interesting because you're watching the guy who's dealing with all of this instead of the guy who's, you know.
So it was a really fun like slapstick farce, like door slamming and then another one opening, and you know characters just narrowly avoiding seeing each other.
You're something you're like, are they going to see each other? No.
Yeah. And it kept up the suspense of the show the whole time.
That's good. Yeah.
And Lee and I were just laughing, like, every other line was especially any line that Mark Rylance delivered. Something about his delivery was just so incredible. So we were, like, beaming after we saw the show. And it's like, you know what? Let's try to do the Empire State Building. It was, like, 9:30, same time that we had gone Monday night. But this time we brought books just in case it was another long wait. Apparently, it was the whole deal with Broadway not having any shows on Monday night because we just were zipping through the line.
Like you just got right up there, yeah.
Yeah, we went up the escalator literally the moment we got there.
Oh, wow.
As opposed to we were waited there like half an hour the night before.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And so we got through, and then Lee had found out this thing about the City Pass where you had, it was like half off, it was like a booklet that you bought, and you got...
it's like 70 to 75 bucks, and you got admission to the Empire State Building, to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Guggenheim Museum, the Museum of Modern Art, the American Museum of Natural History, and then either you could take a cruise just directly to Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty, or we did a Harbor Lights cruise.
Oh, wow.
Which took you all around, but then you also got to go right by the Statue of Liberty.
So it was
even better, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's like, I'll go to Ellis Island and see where people used to come into our country. There's kind of an old building that's kind of not used for anything anymore. I don't know. I feel like Ellis Island was so played up, you know, in elementary and middle school.
Yeah.
I really have no desire to go there.
I've been there before.
I've seen so many pictures and like, I don't know. I was really into Immigration for about 2 months.
I loved Immigration. It was my thing.
I don't know. So, I don't know. I just have no desire to, like, actually go to Ellis Island for some reason.
But then, so since we had the City Pass, we were able to skip the regular admission line. So, we were, like, zooming through
this thing.
That
sounds like a great deal, yeah.
It's a really good deal. You can get it for a lot of different cities.
And apparently, someone who had already purchased their ticket from the regular... admission line, then went into the second line, which is where like regular admission and City Pass, and it was this French man and with his wife and it seemed like his two older children.
Yeah.
And we
was
don't
he
know
the ugly Frenchman.
We don't know what happened, but he started like fuming and speaking French really fast, and then he ripped up his admission ticket and like shoved it into his wife, like, here, you just take this. Goes out of line and like leaves, and so then like she leaves, and then like her like the two
kids
like,
are like what
adult are kids are like yeah. leave too. Like we don't know what happened, and Lee speaks French but couldn't pick up on it. It was just too fast.
It might have been regional dialect.
That's true.
Pick up on.
So it was just hilarious to see like him like, here, you just take this. I'm out of here.
I feel like it was an argument between him and his wife, and then like he just kind of was like. Was like, I don't know, and then just kind of really...
Here's what I believe he said, though. I wanted to go to the museum, and it's too much to eat here. I don't even want to eat there. And then, I'm hot and humid. That's what he said.
Hot and humid Frenchman. It sounded slightly Chinese in there.
That didn't sound French at all.
There was a couple
of... samurai!
My French sounds like, when I do try and, like, legitimately sound French, it sounds like, what's his name? Lumiere from Beauty and the Beast, or who's played by, what's his name?
The Candlestick?
Yeah, He's played by, what's his name, who's notorious for doing, you know, sometimes speaking like a French guy, but either that or pretend to be Jerry Lewis, and they love that, so.
But I sort of figured out our location in terms of the streets and everything when we were there in New York. But Lee was able to figure out the subway. So we went up through to the Bronx. And
to see Yankee Stadium.
I had acquired Yankee Stadium tour tickets at like the last minute. They're all sold out. And someone had a private tour, but like 10 people bailed on them. So they had 5 sets up on eBay. And we were able to get that. And we picked them up from this hotel where they were staying called the W Hotel, which felt like we were in a nightclub.
It is. They've started building. They're kind of everywhere now. They're all over. But yeah,
we had to go up to like the 7th floor, and that was the lobby. and like everything was dark, but we were able to get our tickets. And then Lee figured out how to get us to the Bronx, and we went on the Yankee Stadium tour, which was pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's really cool.
You know, we started off in the press box, then we went down to Memorial Park where they've got the plaques and everything for all the famous Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Then we walked
Monument Park.
Okay. Memorial Park.
Memorial Park. We got to go in the Yankees dugout, which I even thought that was cool.
For Lee to think that something sports related was honest to God cool, like I could see it in her face. She thought that was cool.
There's just so much history there in that stadium and that dugout. Like
the
players who played there. I hate
the
Yankees.
Yeah, it's the last year for the stadium.
It is, yeah, yeah.
So
to see it right before.
Yeah, I hate the Yankees too.
I hate the Yankees as a franchise. As a franchise or anything, but Yankee Stadium itself is just such a historic place for baseball.
But it was funny too because the tour guide was a pretty nice guy, and they were talking about the new Yankee Stadium, which is being built right across the block. So we were able to see that, and there are all these obviously Yankee fans on the tour, and he was talking about the new stadium. And it's like, now what's the cost of this new stadium? What's the cost of tickets that are going to be like? It's like, well, you know, the really good seats are, you know, going to be upwards of even like $2,400, like right behind home plate. But we have 80% of it will be affordable seating. Now, what's classified as affordable seating? $80 and less. Oh!
Oh! $80 or more, even.
Oh, 80, yeah, $80 or more. But $80 being.
You could go watch a Brewer game for like $7-$8.
And then it's like, well, who do we write? Who do we call about this?
Here's George Steinbrenner's number. Go ahead and give him.
But it's the sort of thing where it's like the Yankees are arguably the biggest franchise in all of sports.
There's been arguments. I've been in roundtable discussions with Bob Costas, actually, about whether it's the Yankees or
you and Will Leach and Buzz Bissinger.
Yeah, which
I think that's bullshit that Yankee Stadium's tickets are going to cost that much.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Well, it's the drive up the pride. They can do it, so that's why they can.
They can do it. You, I mean, if you're in that position as a business, you might as well.
Do it. I mean, it's almost expected at that point.
And plus, with their payroll, they've got the biggest payroll in all of baseball in terms of the money that they spend on players.
And the sick part is they could still spend more money.
Yeah,
it's really sad, but. We have discussions about what team, biggest team, you know, with the biggest staying power, the largest fan base is, whether it's the Packers or whether it's the Yankees. And I think the Yankees, because they've been around longer, the sport's been around longer. And I think there's definitely a widespread amount of Packer fans, but I don't think there's... And then there comes into the discussion of, are there as many Packer haters as there are Yankee haters? And I don't think that's true, which means that I think the Yankees are a bigger franchise. But anyway.
Well, I think that if you had never been to Yankee Stadium and were a passionate Yankees fan... I think that experience probably would have been just incredible. Like when I went to Lambeau Field for the first time, it was only a few years ago, it just had that aura as soon as you walk in. Like, it's like, you know, it just hits you right in the stomach.
It's just another place like that, where it's just such a neat place to go. And it's just, there's so much, you know, for the love of the game just right there. And even though...
there's so many copies of that Kevin Costner movie just all over the stadium.
It's just, it's just, I don't know, there's just things that you can't put into words of, like, being where, you know, a certain player was when he did something that was incredible, and it's neat. It's neat to see.
Now, with that in mind...
But $80 or more, seriously? I mean, San Diego's already been... San Diego's a pretty expensive city. I think they even have, like, premium, like, their lowest end seating. You can sit out on, like, a lawn and, like, sit there for, like, $10 and hang out and watch, like, a big screen right behind the stadium.
I'm pretty sure that the top ticket at Miller Park is probably, like, $80.
$80, yeah, total.
Now, with that in mind, the idea of walking into a place like Lambeau Field and being overcome with that feeling, we went on the Sex and the City tour.
We did.
Oh, no.
And,
I have to say that Rick outed me, though, on the show for being a big Sex and the City fan. Because, well, like, as a fan, it's not something that I readily express. Made known to everyone. Like, I'm really into Sex and the City. And that's all I've ever mentioned with Sex and the City.
That's all he's associated with.
I can't deny that I am a big fan of the show.
But it's the sort of thing where, like, Lee just really likes it for the characters and the fashion and the story.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you like everything about
it. Watch it with your friends and it has that kind of...
It's not like, you know, Lee's like, oh, yeah, I love drinking a Cosmo. I'm just like Carrie.
No, but I have the same thing kind of with the OC. I just really enjoy the OC. And I've just recently come to grips with, like, telling people that I'm really infatuated with Josh Schwartz as the OC. For some reason, I just love the show. And I don't care, you know, you can knock it down, but to me, it's still golden, and I love it for some reason. But
and I think I was the only straight male on the tour who was enjoying it.
That's like, really true.
There's other guys who were like,
There was another one. Drew just folded his arms and looked disgusted.
But I think that's like their natural reaction. I think if they felt like they were enjoying it, like, they... I don't know. They wanted to hold up that perception, I guess.
Rick
they
did not care.
They wanted to look cool for the other guys on the tour. Whereas it's like, just come on, you're not that cool. You're not that cool.
Yeah, when we got on the bus, yeah, they're like, oh, what did
you do wrong?
Yeah. And I'm like, hey, I've seen every episode of the show. I enjoy it. And these women are like, they were clapping like they just got introduced on the Internet's Maximum Attention.
I guess it's a common reaction.
But
I got to go to Carrie's apartment.
Oh, wow. Here's the thing. On the tour, they had a few stops, and one of them was Carrie's apartment, the stoop where she was.
Yeah.
And the building owners don't want you taking pictures there, and so we were told on the tour that we couldn't take a picture of it. But the stop also coincided with, like, a 20-minute break that they were having, so we were able to check out the shops in the area and everything. And Lee and I looked at some of the shops, and we're coming back to this street, and it's like, Lee... Let's go back and let's take a picture of you in front.
No, we can't do that.
It's sort of like, what's the worst that they can do? Like, you're off the tour. Like, this was already 2.5 hours into it. So, like, we've already seen a number of places.
Your money's worth. Yeah,
so
yeah.
We went back and we took pictures of Carrie's stoop, Lee in front of it.
I was really nervous. I can't be doing this.
They'll get a nervous smile. Like, I don't know if I should be doing this, taking this picture.
And there's a sort of thing where I was kind of expecting to see other people on the tour also be as clever as us and go back and do it, but I'm pretty sure we were the only ones.
They were very rule abiding, I guess. Very, you know, we can't take pictures at the stoop. Oh,
very obedient fans.
So it was actually really cool because they also had on the bus they had a DVD player and screens where when you would pass a location,
they showed the clip from the show.
So if you didn't remember that offhand, they would give you the context
which I thought was really nice.
Yeah,
it's a really good show.
I think it cool that they use so much of the city in the show that it felt, even though it is of course imaginary characters, it felt more real because they were in actual locations and places.
Well, yeah,
we picture them in the city and we ate at places that they ate
in the
show.
The last night we ate at Pasties, which I once called Pasties. And Lee's like, you can't say that. I don't even know what that is. I haven't looked up Pasties yet.
It's like a sticker that women wear to cover the nipple area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what a pasty is.
If you were more of a theater major, you'd know
you
that.
You would know.
Yeah, they do that in theater.
I was just waiting the whole time for Titanic, so I just was not paying attention
not
at all.
And you were not soaking
during
up any information.
Pasties 101. I did take that. Yeah, that was weird.
Pasties 101. No, so...
But we ate at this Pasties, which... And, right? That's how you say it?
Pasties.
And we ate there the final night that we were there. And it just worked out perfectly because the show that we were seeing right after it was this thing called The Rejection Show, which was at a comedy club called Comics, which I didn't realize is like one of the top comedy clubs in the world in America.
Really nice.
It was really nice. And the host was just a really nice guy. And it was the sort of thing where when I was a little weary of it, too, even though I was really excited to see it because I've heard rave reviews about it, a lot of positive press. But whenever you go to a comedy show and it's people that you don't know what you're getting. So, like, I just kept waiting sort of, like, for it to be a really vulgar comedian like, uncomfortable with it with Lee. But no, like, everyone that we saw was really funny.
Really funny, really
and,
good.
And, like, we were laughing at the same parts and it was just a really enjoyable show.
That's good, yeah.
And we saw the woman who is the face of the print ads for Cymbalta. The face of depression. She was one of the people that told her story.
She was really funny.
She was really funny.
At first, you're not sure how she's going to be, because she's a little weird. A little too weird. Wig and stuff.
Trying to be a little too much like quirky Amy Sedaris.
Oh,
like,
okay, yeah.
But like all she did, like part of her rejected one-woman show, which was letters that people wrote O.J. Simpson. And it was compiled in this book, and she was doing like the characters of the people reading their letters, and it was really funny. And I wrote the host of the show, John Friedman. I sent him an email afterwards just saying, hey, we just want to let you know that you put on a great show. And he wrote me a really nice email back saying that, you know, he really appreciates whenever someone says that they liked it. And
that's really,
the Rejection Show does have a book coming out next year in February. Mm-hmm. So be sure to get that.
And what's, like, the overarching theme of the Rejection Show?
Basically, anything that you've been rejected for or rejected, like a guy showed when he did an audition for
Blind Date.
The show Blind Date.
Yeah.
A friend of his was a PA on the show, so he sent he was able to get him back his audition tape. So it's him in front of that the Blind Date you know, screening bag.
Yeah.
And what were a few of the other ones?
People from the Rejected Show, The Sauce. On The Fuse.
It was some show on The Fuse that was network that was canceled, so it was like the staff was there and they were showing some clips from the show.
A girl auditioned for American Idol and didn't get it.
And had her story. Yeah, it was, so I mean,
like people who tried out for things are like romantically rejected or any of those.
It was nothing really like that, but you could incorporate that into it.
Well, that's why.
I think it's different guests.
Me being me.
Yeah, it's always different guests.
They just kind of rotate. And
it was just this is a really neat, like, little variety show. Very small audience. We were sitting dead center, and the host's parents and family were right in front of us, which I thought was really sweet. And it was just, you know, it wasn't a packed house or anything. It was just, they put on a really good show. They had a house band there that would do, like, a song that would tie in, like, a little, like, 30-second interstitial after a story. And
like a talk show, yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was great.
It sounds really neat.
And then to wrap it up, on Thursday, we went to the NBC studio tour.
Oh, I love the NBC studio.
You skipped where I made them and
the Falls. Oh, yeah. First of all, we were coming back. It was from the Empire State Building, right? Is that
what? I don't know if it was from there. That was back from comics.
I thought it was the night before. Well, we were coming back one night, and Lisa...
I love... Wait, one second. That always happens when people talk about their trips, always. There's always a bit where it's like, I thought it was this. No, it was this.
Well, it really doesn't. We were coming back from something. That's... Lisa, we're looking around confused right now.
She was like, Steph. Was the figure. But it was not to us.
No. It was for someone else who was outside the room.
Oh, okay. But yeah, we were coming back from something, and we were in the cab, and it was like a billboard on top of another taxi, right?
Oh, okay.
And Lee said, you say,
Alec Baldwin is a New Yorker. Who cares?
That's the sign that was on top of this taxi. It was the thing for Alec Baldwin. He's a New Yorker. Who cares? But I heard it.
By volunteering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a United Way, something like that. But I heard it as, Alec Baldwin is a New Yorker. Who cares? like, wow, I didn't realize that Lee was so disgusted with Alec Baldwin.
Yeah. Oh, he's a... Who cares?
Just Lee having all of a sudden this disgust for Alec Baldwin. Who cares?
I'm pretty sure he's actually from Massachusetts.
I don't know this.
Who cares?
Oh, true.
No.
That was really sloppy. That didn't really work.
That was did not fit together the way I wanted it to.
There was also a really nice part when we were walking throughout the streets of New York around Times Square, and there was a big traffic jam. So even though we had the walk light, there were still cars trying to get through the intersection, so people were being really nice and letting those cars go first.
Oh, wow.
When all of a sudden this woman comes by with, like, her husband, and she, like, walks through the walk sign. She's walking past the other side, you know, where she's just crossed. She's like, I don't know what people are waiting for. We have the walk sign. And this Asian guy is like, it's because people are being courteous. You fucking idiot.
Wait. So he was like, he said something like, you know, kind of intelligent.
Yeah.
Because people
are
being courteous. You fucking.
Yeah, you fucking idiot. I like that you stopped yourself before saying idiot. You fucking.
I just didn't want to repeat the full phrase because I feel like people had heard that and it would be repetitive at that point.
Yeah, so it was funny too because it totally summed up how I was feeling about her walking by in a huff about
So anyway, how was the NBC Studios tour? I've always wanted to take that.
It was really cool. We got to go where Brian Williams does the nightly news. And we got to go where Conan O'Brien shoots. So that was my favorite part of it.
Yeah,
I've heard it's really small.
And,
I wanted to go there before he leaves New York, but I don't think I'll have a chance.
Apparently the furniture that they use, they get it from some company where it's like it's really small furniture. Because then, when they broadcast it on TV, they stretch the image to make it look like And so it's just funny seeing like these, like they look like kids' miniature couches.
They look tiny furniture. Yeah. Well, on the Tonight Show, I've always noticed. Yeah, the furniture looks a little bit larger, a little bit more spacious than on late night.
I don't know how I feel about Jimmy Fallon coming in to host
the.
No.
On that note, yeah.
Good night.
I liked him, but
no.
The thing with Jimmy Fallon is I like him in small doses, so him running a show every night, 5 days a week, I think is going to be overload for me on Jimmy Fallon.
I liked Jimmy Fallon a little bit when he started on Saturday Night Live. He was pretty funny, and then he went into laughing through every skit that they did, which I found annoying. But the best thing that Jimmy Fallon has ever done, and I will stand by this until the day I die, is that Pepsi commercial with Parker Posey.
Where they dance.
That was like the greatest
thing
ever.
You can't help
but
smile when you see that Pepsi commercial.
We were over at my grandma's apartment and that came on. And my grandma, who can't hear, found that to be hilarious.
It's just, you can't help but smile when you watch that commercial.
Then
he throws her up in the air. She doesn't give no.
Then he just shrugs it off
and
resumes dancing.
It was shades of Sandler, I'd say, almost. Not like of a similar comedic style, where it's like Sandler just does something and he's like, no, I'll just keep doing it anyway. But like, that's something from Billy Madison I think you'd have to watch and get from.
He throws a girl up in the air and shrugs and then dances.
Not the same exact concept, but applied to a different situation.
But we didn't really see any celebrities,
other
than the ones in like shows. But when we were leaving Milwaukee on the airport, as we were walking down our gate, this little small person walked by, and it was like, I swear to God, there's a small person wrestler, and that was him. But I couldn't go up to him and be like, do you work for the WWE? Like, I swear this was him. And I just don't know why he would be in Milwaukee, but that was sort of our biggest
celebrity signing.
Other than the ones that we saw at Madame Tussauds Wax Museum.
Oh, wow.
They were not real, though, unfortunately.
No, they look real. But they are not.
They do look very lifelike, though.
Everyone except Brad Pitt.
Yeah, he didn't look real.
Brad Pitt looked, like, emaciated.
Well, the thing with Brad Pitt is that, there's a pause there. I was telling my sister to go back inside. She's trying to ask me a question right now. I'm being very rude.
Your sister, who does appear on the sketchbook audio commentary.
Audio commentary, yes.
Sketchbook is on DVD now, by the way.
Yeah, it is on DVD. It's been released, so I could.
Check your local
Drew Stafford account. Drew probably has one on him.
Yeah, at all times.
Sorry, what were you saying?
About Brad Pitt. Well, he changes himself, like, visually for most roles, so it's tough to like.
And depending on the women he's dating.
This is also
true.
Very
true.
But he changes his look so much that I think it'd be difficult to build a realistic looking statue of him.
I don't think I know any guys in real life that change what they look like with their girlfriend.
You should have seen me before I started going out really. 4.5 years ago, torn up jeans all the time. I never wear jeans now.
He used to wear cut-off t-shirts, you know, with the arms exposed and
the really
fake tan.
Huge armpit holes.
Yeah.
I don't get why they do that either. They're really huge armpit holes.
Yeah. I had my tattoos removed from my face.
That's actually where Michael Tyson got the idea for his, was from yours.
I like that you referred to Mike Tyson as Michael Tyson. Oh man, did you see that Buster Douglas Michael Tyson fight? When Buster Douglas knocked him out, could you believe that? When Michael Tyson lost in a fight? I couldn't believe when Michael Tyson bit Evander Holyfield's ear off. That Michael Tyson sure is a lunatic.
I think adding Michael to it makes him sound more like refined.
It classes him up. It classes him up.
I should be his publicist, actually. Michael. So the first thing we're doing, we're switching your name to Michael. Every press release.
We're approaching sort of near the end of the show. Mm-hmm. Anything else that we did in New York that feels that we should need to mention it?
We need to mention it.
Yeah, I think
I'm pretty much covered.
Pretty much covered. Was there anything that you did while we were in New York?
No.
You've got like 2 minutes.
Sat around. There's. I think there's too much for 2 minutes. I'll say that way.
Yeah.
And we'll save for a different show.
We'll cover it the next show.
We had some fun stuff happen yesterday with Apple iPhones that I'll bring up in the next podcast. So that's a preview of the upcoming podcast.
Ooh, a teaser. Should we get to our recommendations of the
week?
Sounds
good.
I'm going to first off go with my sandwich recommendation. The chicken parmesan at Subway. Write to them. Be like the Yankees fans that want cheaper tickets. Write to your Subway. Even your local one.
Write to Jared. Just, I'm pretty sure he has no say in the company.
Just hand them a postcard and see what you can do to get the chicken parmesan sandwich back. Lee?
Your favorite?
Or Drew?
I think
might...
a sandwich?
Do you have a sandwich in mind? If not, I can go.
No,
ahead.
You'll have to go.
I'd say like maybe just a standard like warm roast beef on like a toasted rye bread or a toasted marble rye bread. That would be that'd be delicious. Maybe just a little sprinklings of Parmesan cheese in there and some lettuce.
I think the only sandwich that I eat with real regularity would be a Whopper Jr. with no pickles, no onion, and no ketchup.
There you go.
That does count as a sandwich. It should be noted that I'm the one who always gets those poorly.
Yeah.
I pick them up, and I'm the one who always drives and goes through the drive-thru.
And you make
so
sure. No,
it's
no
always
pickles.
No pickle, no onion.
Just no pickles,
ketchup.
No onions. No, no pickles, no onions, and no ketchup. So no ketchup, no onions. No, no pickles, no onions, no ketchup. It's like, I don't know. Where,
you only
where they
get it right
people.
About 50% of the time.
Yeah.
No, that's my thing.
This,
is the other... The other day, yeah, I went and got a salad from an unnamed fast food chain, and I wanted the just a Caesar.
Do you
salad.
Work for them, Drew? You don't want to name them.
From Culver's, the Wisconsin fast food chain. They actually, they got some good healthy choices.
Yeah.
They have some good salads, and I wanted the Caesar salad, just standard Caesar salad, and they gave me the chicken cashew salad.
Not very similar taste.
Not at all. And I got home and I was like, I have no appetite for this, and just put it. It's still in my fridge, actually, for someone else to eat. Mm-hmm. So
they always say you're supposed to check it there, but I never do.
Yeah, well, it was like I was getting food for like six people, so it was like I'm not just gonna say. I looked for all their stuff; it was there, and then I saw a salad box, so I figured it was all right.
Mm-hmm.
And I got home and was sorely disappointed.
What is your album recommendation?
My album recommendation this week is it came out earlier this year, I believe, in February or March. It's called Alone, and the full title is Alone, the home recordings of Rivers Cuomo, the frontman for Weezer, where he, it's kind of a demo put together about like 12 or 13 songs that he wrote over the years that never really made it to a Weezer album, including stuff off an album that they were supposed to do, which was going to be more of like a concept album that was supposed to be turned into a stage musical that never really made it, and
we could have seen it while we were in New York.
Yeah, I know.
And followed through.
So I'm sure someone in New York will probably put together like a half version of it with what's actually out there. So, but there's some good stuff on there where you're like, oh, this is like really good songs. It's just like stuff that maybe never either fit in that Weezer mold.
Yeah,
or never made it.
I'm thinking Broadway, thinking musicals. I'm gonna go with one of my favorite musicals. It's called My Favorite Year. You can get the cast recording of that. Lee and I saw a production of it in Chicago.
Very good.
Which was excellent, and it was at a smaller theater. And it's a really great musical. Not really the best movie, but the musical is wonderful.
What's it about?
This guy's a comedy writer on a show in like the 50s.
Oh, right.
And his matinee idol is a guest on it, and he's sort of spending time with his matinee idol trying to sort out his life and the guy's life as well.
Oh, okay.
Which it's a really funny show and touching too.
Good.
My recommendation then would be the Xanadu soundtrack, particularly tracks 8 and 9. The music
of the cast recording.
Of the cast recording.
Okay.
And
we haven't seen the movie, so
the play, all the music was done by the Electric Light Orchestra.
Oh wow.
So there's like a version of Evil Woman. But the music is like just genuinely really good. Like even if it wasn't in a musical, I think.
It's really fun. Yeah.
I love Yellow, yeah. Yeah. So, sorry, Rick.
That's okay. What? Why
I abbreviated words? Electric Light.
That I don't mind because they did go by that.
Themselves
yeah.
as Yellow.
Yeah, that's fine. If you would call them like the Electric Light, or I love Electric Orchestra.
Yeah, or I think Electric
or
Orchestra would.
Yeah, or Orchestra. Yeah, then yeah.
Light Orchestra. I love Light Orchestra.
That could be a comedy bit, like, oh, so you just like a few instruments in it? No, the band, Light Orchestra.
The Light Orchestra. An orchestra lit up? No! See, like, people with, like neon-looking violins and, like, something kind of, like, mid-90s, like that, like, hot, like club era. Yeah.
Yeah. We did have glow sticks at the end of Xanadu. I had purchased them. The last number of Xanadu, you get the song itself, Xanadu, you get to wave
the
glow sticks.
Around. There you go.
So it all ties together.
There you go.
What's your movie recommendation of the week?
My film recommendation, the one to rent, I guess, go and rent, would be Coyote Ugly. I watched that the other day.
Never seen it.
And realized that, I don't know, I thought... There's certain parts of it that are actually like...
There's ports in it. There's ports in that movie. That's the sticking it to stack this week.
Drew, I don't like it when you drift in and out of accents from areas that you have no experience living in. Unfortunately.
I was nervous coming out of here, though, because Rick does that. Anytime a person slips up.
Yeah, no.
But it's
that's just something that happens to my boys. Every once in a while, I'll slip into an accent from somewhere where I've never lived or have no experience living or, like, I've never spent an extended period of time. I've never been to England, and sometimes I'll just say things like, oh, yeah, that sounds really nice. And I'll be like, what just happened? What happened with my voice?
So there are parts of it.
There's parts of it that, I don't know, are actually, like, legitimately, like, make it a good film. And I think you should go out and... It's a fun little film to watch one night and be like, Coyote Ugly, right on.
Just trying to think of a movie to recommend. I think I'm going to go with a movie that we know as... I don't have one picked out. Drew has the notebook.
And
I'm gonna go.
The notebook.
Yeah,
you're gonna go with the notebook.
No,
you're gonna go with the notebook.
Lee has one. So
I'm gonna recommend Night at the Museum.
There you go.
It's a very cute movie. We saw it after my dog died. It was very sad. It was the first pet that we had lost, and Rick took me to go see Smokin' Aces. It's like a big shoot 'em up movie,
yeah.
Which was like a horrible movie to see. Like after your dog.
You make that sound like I was like, I'm really sorry that Jedi passed away. Here's how I'm gonna cheer you up. We're gonna go see Smokin' Aces.
No, it was already planned and it just happened to coincide that. So then afterwards I went with my mom and dad and brother and son at night at the museum and it was very cute.
Well, I'm gonna go with Smokin' Aces then. If you lose a wonderful pet, the best way to cheer yourself up is watch Jeremy Piven cry for a movie, and also Jason Bateman in lingerie.
Yeah, and Joel Carhan's follow-up to Narc. It's,
it's a fun movie.
It's a fun movie. I still don't know how I feel about it in terms of the whole, but, like, it's a fun movie with a pretty good score by Clint Mansell. He does wonderful movies, film scores.
Also has Ryan Reynolds, so.
Ryan Reynolds, my man crush. And
Ryan,
I would say,
you loved him on Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place.
I've loved him.
Not so much on just Two Guys and a Girl. Different
no,
feel.
No, different feel. It was love at first sight when I saw him on ABC Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock.
You liked him when he was playing the MTV jock sports. What did they call that? He was in baseball.
The jock, yeah.
And he made the winning catch.
Rock
in
jock.
One of the game, rock jock. Yeah, he made
they
the winning catch
back.
In one of the games.
That's why I wanted to be a celebrity when
I
grew up.
I
because I wanted to
that.
Play in the rock jock.
Hey, what was the movie that Ryan Reynolds was just in?
Was
definitely
it Definitely Maybe?
Maybe?
No, yeah, Definitely
Maybe.
Maybe
with
now, did you
Breslin.
See that?
No.
No,
you
sure?
I have this thing about Abigail Breslin that I won't see any of her movies.
Drew.
Really?
Wait, Drew.
Take Kidridge out of the question.
Mm-hmm. Do you intend on seeing the movie?
Yes, I
do. Ah, you missed it! Drew.
Who cares?
You go, no. Do you intend on seeing the movie? Oh, definitely. Maybe.
You're a jerk.
that's your stack deck to me, that I'm a jerk.
No. You're a jerk.
I saw the movie's pretty good.
I'd say my weekend film
that's
recommendation.
That's side recommendation of the week.
Yeah. I saw it. It was pretty good. No, I do have an intention of seeing it. I just made that Abigail Breslin thing up for controversy.
For kicks.
For kicks. So I'd say go see Hellboy 2. I enjoyed the first one. This one's getting great reviews. And it's Guillermo del Toro and his most recent film.
All right. I think we should probably wrap it up before... I don't know how long we can go on this one, but I don't want to risk locking it up and freezing.
No, real quick, though, YouTube recommendation of the week would be Hooked on a Feeling, the David Hasselhoff music video from, like, 2000, 2001. It's from 97, where he does this, he does this thing in front of a green screen.
Yeah, and he's flying through
the
air.
And he's, like, flying through the air on a motorbike. If you haven't seen it, you will die laughing.
I'm going to go with Bandana Brothers, which I realize now is on YouTube. Just search Bandana Brothers.
You didn't realize that was
on YouTube. No, it was on Jump Cup, but I didn't realize it was on YouTube.
Yeah, no, it's up there.
Because my name was popped up, and it was
like,
Bandana Brothers.
You're like, oh, I'm on the internet.
that was my response.
It kind of ruined your whole living off the grid thing.
Yeah, that's true. Lee, do you have a YouTube?
I don't think I
think
have
I have
YouTube.
One for
Which
you.
One would be for
Any videos by Ryan Taylor Blitz?
Yes. He's very good.
Lee really likes this guy, Ryan Taylor Bliss, and he's a musician, and he does covers, and has a few...
He has a really good voice, he sings from his bathroom.
I like those people on YouTube, who definitely, like, you're like, you're a talented musical artist,
yeah,
and that's
like,
how they get exposure.
I hope he makes it someday, it's just fun to
kind of
discover
yeah,
stuff,
yeah,
that
definitely.
You think he's actually talented.
Definitely, yeah, I got a few of those too, yeah, they're good stuff, so... Ryan Taylor Bliss. Alright.
Okay, well, I think this has been episode 11 of The Internet's Maximum Potential. I've been Rick Kashke.
I've been Drew Steck.
I've been Lee Allen.
And this has been
The Internet's Maximum Potential.
Michael Tyson.